session number 14582, reel 5.
Reel 5. Yes, you were telling me about the camp at Hay.
Well, the facilities that they're awaiting us were really excellent. I mean, the Australians have really organised that extraordinarily well. We were given to understand that the camp was prepared for Italian prisoners of war, but in the event we went there, and we quickly established a very good rapport with the camp authorities. Everything went really quite smoothly, and there were rations awaiting us, and we were kitted out with Australian Army gear, that is fatigues and woolen underwear and woolen socks and army boots, and it was impressive how they prepared the camp. And people were accommodated in huts. Each hut had a representative for the camp parliament, but in some cases the inhabitants of the huts got organized beforehand, and as was the case in ours. I mean, it so happens that the eventual camp leader was also in our hut, and he approached me before we reached Hay. He said, "Well, when we get into the camp and they're going to be huts, would you like to join my hut?" And I said, "Gladly, but there are 12 others I'm together with," and he was quite happy to accommodate us all, and we turned out to be a very important hut, because we didn't have the camp doctor who had his own surgery, of course, but we had the camp leader, we had the quartermaster, stores, banker, post office. It was all organized from our hut, and very well too, I must say. We had a camp school too, and where we had quite interesting courses. We had musicians in the camp and actors who organized camp activities. And in no time, we had a really organized camp life. I was involved with organizing sports, and I worked in the camp laundry. The food was prepared by expert cooks, and we, in fact, created our own camp money, which was soon to be declared illegal by the Australian authorities, although it was specifically for use within the camp. It appears that you can get quite a lot of money for some notes in good condition. I produced some alcoholic drink, and was constantly afraid that during the fermentation process some of the bottles in which it was kept might pop and draw the attention to the periodic hut inspection, to the inspectors of the, who came around periodically to see whether everything was all right. No, it was, I'm looking back on the time in Hay, not with the degree of acidity that you find among some other people. Oh, my wife's back. I shouldn't have said that.
Could I ask you, you were saying about your possessions on the boat, how these were stolen. Did you have any redress about this? Did you make complaints? And
yes,
was anything done?
We all had the forms eventually where we could claim. As I say, I mean, I didn't claim for much because I didn't have much. And then I also asked myself, is it worth claiming? Because some things are of sentimental value which you can't assess at all. It's I understand that some of the most amazing claims were put in, not because they were dishonest, but because people had most odd things with them when they were interned. There was one man, an odd character, who had three bicycle dynamos with him, for which he claimed. I mean, it's quite extraordinary.
Was anyone sent out to investigate your demands? You know, did
I don't know. I don't know, because what I claimed was past, so it can't have been unreasonable. But in any case, I mean, it's what is reasonable in circumstances like that? I mean, some people. I didn't have much to claim. And claims, I don't know whether claims were met by and large. It was what we were waiting for was release from internment. And the British government, who obviously had an obligation, sent out a man called Major Layton. I don't know whether he was a captain at the time or a major. He came out to essentially to persuade people to join the army or facilitate the return of those of us who had already volunteered, like myself. I was not in the first bunch to get to be sent back. In any case, before we left Hay, some of us, and they're sent to a place called Tatura. I think that was near Orange in Victoria. And it was a smaller camp, with cubicles. I forget how long we were there, and we went from there again. There was a move to a place called, oh God, I forget, New South, in South Australia, just over the border from Victoria. I don't think it's relevant. Spent a relatively short time there, and I think I was in the third ship to go back, called the Stirling Castle. Lovely ship, was on the run to South Africa before the war. And it was very comfortable, 25,000 tons or something, or thereabouts, quite fast, 25 knots or so, was the cruising speed. And we had the fastest journey from the Panama Canal to Liverpool without a convoy during the war. And we had to turn back on one occasion because there was some U-boat reported ahead of us, so we reversed course. It was a relaxed atmosphere on the ship because we knew we were free. Yet, when I arrived in Liverpool, a few of us were taken to the Isle of Man for a few days. But I don't remember that with any degree of very clearly at all. The Isle of Man, except I hated it. I wanted to get out. And eventually, on the 1st of January 42, no, the 2nd of January 42, I took the Oath of Allegiance, and I was a member of the Pioneer Corps. I was sent, funnily enough, again to Heighton, from where I was interned, and there basic training took place.
Before I ask you about this, could I go back to the Dun era? Did you see the... there was a play on television about the Dun era.
I thought it was awful. I thought it was terrible. Because as a documentary, it was a non-event. It was... it was extraordinarily poor as a documentary. And as far as drama is concerned, the acting was just horrible. It bore no relation at all to what I remember. And it's very funny. We had a visitor from Australia who said to me, you know, there was a play called The De Niro Boys. Have you seen it on television in Australia? And I said, no, but I shall watch out for it when it comes over here. And it did come. And I wrote back to Hugh McCaig, who lived in Melbourne. I said, you must have tried to be kind to me when you thought it was a good play, because I thought it was really awful, the whole thing. And so far, I mean, I haven't met anybody who thought it was worth looking at. It was really a distortion.
And how do you feel about the policy of internment? You know, the fact that you were collared, as it were, in this policy, interned and shipped to Australia.
Well, I resent it. I resented it then, and I resent it now. But never to the extent of failing to understand the reasons behind it. And after all, I mean, it all happened at the time of a dire emergency. And while I didn't like it, while I say I resented it, I can understand it. I'm very forgiving about it. And in retrospect, I think a great deal has been done or said to make amends. I mean, there was a man called Paul Lafitte, who wrote a book called The Internment of Aliens, in which he describes in considerable detail the plight of internees. And questions were asked in the House of Commons, and I think Eleanor Rathbone at the time was a person deeply involved in it. And all these people helped me considerably in the process of making good the damage. But we mustn't forget, I mean, much of the injustices and the damages the damage that was created will live on in the memory of the survivors, and some are less forgiving than I am. And the funny thing is this: it seems that the people who stayed behind in Australia, who were sent out on the Daneira, but then decided to stay behind and not come back to this country, I think they are much less forgiving than the ones who went back, because I think to them, to the people who stayed behind in Australia, it is just a bad memory of what happened to how the British treated them. We who came back were much more prepared to be forgiving. I think that's right. I think, by and large, people feel that they've had a raw deal with every justification, but as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't sort of linger on.
And the fact that you went into the Pioneer Corps in the light of your view of the Pioneer Corps people on the Daneira, you know, was this quite a difficult thing to accept, that, you know, that was your only, was it your only option?
Let me say this. Many people in my position felt that they can't sit back and do nothing in the face of the Nazi threat to our lives. When I say our lives, I mean in the broadest sense, I'm talking about the whole world. So what were the options open to me in those days in order to do something useful, something active? I had no technical or scientific background which would enable me to do work of national importance or something like that, or something of that nature. So service in the army was the only thing that was open to me. And what was open to me in the army at that time was the Pioneer Corps. The fact that we were maltreated on the way out by members of the Pioneer Corps is not so much the fault of the pioneers as the people who gave them the instructions. It is incidental that the IQ of the average pioneer on the Daneira is probably very, very low. I don't think that matters. It's the people who gave the instructions, and they were mistaken. Now, obviously, also instructions that are given. Let's say if Churchill says, color the lot, by the time it reaches the man who commands the unit, these orders get distorted. I don't know whether I make myself clear there, but it is obvious that if Churchill in his bunker had an idea of how to act at a given moment in relation to so-called enemy aliens, I mean, by the time these ideas are translated into fact, I mean, they're no longer the same ideas. So I don't bear any grudge. And when I joined the Pioneer Corps, I didn't think I was joining the particular unit that received us onto the Donera at the time. In any case, from the moment I joined the Pioneer Corps, I had hopes of getting out eventually. And I did, but it took almost a year. I mean, I had, when I finished my recruit's training, I was posted to a company called 87th Company, which was one of the early companies, which means that a lot of people who were recruited from the Kitchener Camp, the Kitchener Camp was in Kent, sort of a reception camp for refugees from Germany and Austria who had no contribution, who had no way out of this dilemma of being in a camp, albeit not a concentration camp, but it was nevertheless camp life, and they one of the options they had was to join the Pioneer Corps. And they did. They did that. I understand why they did it, because it gave them something more positive to do than sit around inactivity. So being able to see that didn't make them terribly attractive to me when I met up with these so-called old fogies when I eventually joined this company, because some of them in fact had been to France and they were therefore old veterans of the war. But they resented newcomers. They felt they were the old incumbents anybody who arrived like I did a year or so later than they did, I mean, was of no consequence. And I was amused by them, but they took their attitude towards the new arrivals, like myself, ex-internees. I mean, to me, it was really all rather amusing because it showed up some sort of a narrow-mindedness or inability to understand what prompted us and that we did not volunteer to be interned. When I joined 87th Company, a large number of people had been there from the year dot, so to speak. They joined from the Kitchener Camp. And we, the newcomers, were not worthy of any serious consideration. Yet, there were a number of people who had been with me in Australia, and I should add here that I was sent to Ilfracombe, but the moment I arrived there, I was literally told, don't get settled in because we're leaving tomorrow, we're going to a place called Pembroke Dock. Well, we arrived at Pembroke Dock. There were Victorian barracks. I think they were built in 1850 or something like that. And it was a most dismal place. Pembroke Dock is not a very attractive place in any case, but these barracks, called defensible barracks, were overlooking the the port, the dock, and windswept, cold, miserable, unfriendly. The town was probably a mile and a half away or more, equally dismal and unfriendly. And the day we had, on our day off, so to speak, on a Sunday, I mean, when we went into the Pembroke Dock, you couldn't even get a drink in those days in Wales on a Sunday. Instead, we wired the time away to go to the chapel and listen to community singing or something like that. It was really awful. I hated it. Then one day, I was asked with another 30 people or so to go on what was called a detachment to a place called Aberaeron. That's in Mid Wales, on the Cardigan coast. It was lovely. It was really great because we were working with an engineers unit who were all craftsmen, experts, knew what they were doing in camp construction and camp maintenance. Aberaeron was an ACAC school where people learned to use predictors in connection with anti-aircraft guns. It was marvelous. We were only a small number of people. We had a lieutenant in charge of us, and there were probably a couple of sergeants, I don't remember. And I got myself a job working on some pumps which were used for drainage and that sort of thing. And I really felt I was doing something useful. And that came to an end. After a few months, and we were posted back to the cut to the unit at a place called Long Marston near Stratford-on-Avon. And there, stores were assembled and distributed for the invasion of North Africa. I was driving a little mobile crane, and there was a stupid section corporal who asked me, with whom I got into an argument, quite stupid argument, and he put me on the charge. And it was quite ludicrous, because it's never happened before in an alien company that somebody was sent to down 2 weeks detention, and I was spend Christmas in the guard room, and before my case was heard, and I don't think there was anybody in Britain who had more turkey and trimmings on that day than I did, because everybody thought it was ludicrous. I was sent then to Rochdale, Stake Hill Detention Barracks in Rochdale to do my 2 weeks. And I was sent there with two, with one corporal and one private as guards. And we had to change trains in Birmingham. And I arrived at Stake Hill. And the first thing I learned was that Gracie Fields used to work there as a mill hand in the... But there was nothing at all in these, no machinery in the mill now. There was just a shell of the building, and inside it there, I forget how many hundreds of prisoners. I did my 2 weeks. It didn't do me any harm. I think I was the only person there who enjoyed the PT because of in the snow. In the morning, the mail was distributed at roll call, and I think probably 90% of the mail was for me, because everybody in the unit and all my friends thought it was so stupid for me to be in sent out detention that it was really quite a joke. For for me to get all these letters. I felt that all my efforts up to that point to leave the Pioneer Corps to get into another more useful unit, I thought I'd lost my every opportunity of success, because I thought it was a black mark in my record. But it so happened that about 2 weeks later, I was asked to go for an interview to Northumberland Avenue, where a little studious-looking major with very thick glasses behind the enormous desk asked me questions which I thought were totally irrelevant. And, he didn't say anything at the end of the interview, but about a week later or so, I got my marching orders. And I didn't know what unit I was going to join, but I was so happy to be away from 87th Company, or from the Pioneer Corps, that it was really, it didn't matter at all. I was happy that I was out of it, and I was glad that my conviction of 2 weeks' detention didn't mar my record. That was in 1943, I think it must have been February 1943, and I met at Victoria Station up with a few other people, and we all went down to a place called Stodham Park at Liss, near Petersfield. It used to be the residence of the governor of Burma. I found that out by chance, because I mentioned to some people that I'd been to Stodham Park. Oh, old Reggie, I forget his surname. He was the governor of the Bank of England. Not Bank of England, the governor of Burma, I was told. And, but that's beside the point. It's a lovely old house, lovely house in the country, not an old house at all. And that's where I was initiated into a new form of training, new for me. And it went on for a month, and then there were this group of us, there was some weeding out process, and the ones who were left went up to Scotland.
What was that initial training there?
Getting us really fit, weapon training of various weapons and explosives. And I don't know whether I can't remember any training on wireless operations and things like that at that time, I do not know.
Were you wondering what this was for?
Indeed. I didn't have a clue, but I didn't mind, because I was away from the Pioneer Corps. I didn't know what I was leading up to. But the important thing was that we all knew we were preparing for something. And it only became to us apparent what it was much later on. We didn't mind whether it was... We knew it wasn't a regiment of the line. We thought it might have been commandos or airborne. But we were waiting. From there, we went to Scotland, which was fantastic. I love Scotland. A place called Arisaig. The house is now a luxury hotel, and right by the sea. It's on the road to the Isles between Glenfinnan and Mallaig, and their training became more exhausting, and we were the accent was very much on fitness, and we then, at the end of 4 weeks, during which we only saw the sun on one occasion, and then it virtually never stopped raining, but none of that affected us. And I really got to love Scotland, even the porridge with salt instead of with sugar. And the whole atmosphere, the country, it was all great. And we had one instructor called Harold Hughes, who was of Welsh extraction, but a fellow Scot, if there ever was one. And he sort of helped to imbue certainly me and some of the others with a love for Scotland. From there, we went to Ringway, where near Manchester, aerodrome near Manchester, where we did our jumps, parachute jumps. One jumps from progressively lower altitudes and has therefore less time to enjoy the sensation of floating down. Gradually more and more people were weeded out because either they themselves felt they were not suitable or they were adjudged by our instructors not to be suitable. We then went for 9 months, but we didn't know it was going to be 9 months, to a place called Anderson Manor in Dorsetshire, or in Dorset, and there the toughening up process proceeded, and we got more involved in exercises where we had to make our own decisions